Welcome to That's What She Said, a podcast of sermons at Galileo Christian Church, Disciples of Christ. Galileo exists to seek and shelter spiritual refugees, who for us are people for whom the church has become boring, irrelevant, exclusive, or even painful, especially people who have been pushed out because of their gender or sexuality. If you yourself are a spiritual refugee, we're especially glad you're listening. And if you find this podcast helpful in your theological rehabilitation, consider partnering with us in its production. Become a financial sponsor of That's What She Said on Patreon, a platform for supporting content you love. Thanks!
We're in this worship series right now that I'm describing like a Venn diagram. In one of the circles are spiritual practices for right now, a list of 10 things that many of you have told me have been restorative and refreshing for your own souls during this weird season that we are enduring together these days. And we're taking those spiritual practices for right now and at the same time reading continuously through the Gospel of Luke's stories about Jesus and kind of looking for the points at which they intersect. And so hopefully planning worship and preaching from right in the intersection of those two circles. There are cards on the tables among you in the barn with those spiritual practices for right now listed on them. There's also a graphic of that in the announcements channel on our Discord server. So if you're online with us tonight, you can find it there. I'm reading tonight, picking up where we left off last week from Luke chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. One Sabbath, while Jesus was going through some grain fields, his disciples plucked some heads of grain, rubbed them in their hands, and ate them. But some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered, "Have you not read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? How he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and gave some to his companions? Then he said to them, 'The Son of Humanity is Lord of the Sabbath.' On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and taught, and there was a man there whose right hand was withered. The scribes and the Pharisees were watching him to see whether he would cure on the Sabbath so that they might find grounds to bring an accusation against him. But he knew what they were thinking. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, 'Come stand in the middle.' He got up and stood there. And then Jesus said to them, 'I ask you, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to destroy it?' And after looking around at all of them, he said to the man, 'Stretch out your hand.' He did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and began discussing with one another what they might do to Jesus." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. I have a content consideration to share with you tonight, about a third of the way into this sermon, that is to say 5-6 minutes. There will be a mention of ancient homophobic violence. Take care of yourselves accordingly. "You shall make a table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long, 1 cubit wide, and 1.5 cubits high. You shall overlay the table with pure gold and make a molding of gold around it. You shall make around it a rim, 1 handbreadth wide, and a molding of gold around the rim. You shall make for it 4 rings of gold and fasten the rings to the 4 corners at its 4 legs. The rings that hold the poles used for carrying the table shall be close to the rim. You shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold, and the table shall be carried with these poles. You shall make its plates and dishes and its flagons and bowls with which to pour drink offerings. You shall make them of pure gold, and you shall set the bread of the presence on the table before me continually." Exodus 25:23. Through 30. "You shall take choice flour and bake 12 loaves of it. 2/10 of an ephah shall be in each loaf. You shall place them in two rows, six to a row, on the table of pure gold before the Lord. You shall put pure frankincense with each row to be a token offering for the bread as an offering by fire to the Lord. Every Sabbath day, the high priest Aaron shall set the loaves in order before the Lord regularly as a commandment of the Israelites, as a covenant forever. The loaves shall be for Aaron and his descendants, the priestly class only, who shall eat them in a holy place, for they are most holy portions for him from the offerings by fire to the Lord, a perpetual due. Leviticus 24:5-9. Dun, dun, dun. It's like really dramatic stuff, right? I mean, is the suspense just killing you? I see you leaning forward in your seats. You just can't wait to hear what comes next. So back when Israel was a ragtag band of nomads having just escaped enslavement in Egypt, no place to call home, no geography of their own, God traveled with them, according to Exodus, the tale of their harrowing escape and their life on the run. And whenever they found a safe place to camp for a little while, they would pitch a special tent made to divine specs. The tent was called the tabernacle. It was like a portable throne room in which God could set a spell and put God's feet up. And in that tabernacle, they would set a little table for God. Besides all the gold, it wasn't too fancy. Just fresh baked bread and a little sweet smelling incense. Not that God ever ate a bite of what they set out, but it was a symbol, see, of their welcome for God. It was their invitation for God to stay with them wherever they traveled. And so it was called the bread of the presence because it invited God's presence to rest with God's people. They replaced the bread every Sabbath, every seventh day, whether it needed it or not. And being the zero-waste nomads that they were, it was the priest's job to eat the old batch. Don't think of moldy loaves of soft, fluffy bread. Think of large, round, flour and water crackers, crunchy, matzah, with which you will be familiar if you grew up in one of those churches that snapped tiny flakes of those slightly stale, salt-free squares for communion on Sundays. Any matzah communion people in the room? Yeah. And then one day, many, many generations into Israel's ongoing conquest of the land they felt they were promised, but still a couple generations away from having an established permanent temple in an established permanent capital city, David, the chaotic bisexual, see our sermon series from the summer of 2021, if you're curious. David asks for the bread of the presence. He is not yet Israel's king. He is in a multi-year fight to the death with the king, King Saul, who is also the father of his lover, Jonathan. Saul is enraged by many things about David, not least his son's relationship with David. As David and Jonathan's love for each other intensifies and comes into clear focus for Saul, he tries to kill them both. Because for some people, the wrong kind of love feels dangerous and provokes rage. After a night of making out and crying with Jonathan, because tearful makeouts are the hottest makeouts, can I get an amen? David goes on the run to escape Saul's violence with a little band of mercenaries that he keeps on his payroll. You can read all about that in 1 Samuel chapter 20. It's all there, I promise. Anyway, after traveling fast and hard all night long, David and his guys arrive at Nob, where the tabernacle is still doing its thing. That tent still set up, offering hospitality to the God who is still tabling with God's people. And there is the bread of the presence on that little golden table, having been replaced every Sabbath for, I don't know, hundreds of weeks, thousands of weeks. The priests munching the old stuff every Saturday while the new stuff goes on to the golden dishes. David is hungry. His guys are hungry. So he says to the priest, "Give me that." And the priest says, "No." And David says, "Please, we're really hungry. And anyway, we might not be priests, but we are the good guys, I swear." David was always very persuasive, very beautiful and charismatic. And as usual, he gets what he wants. And pretty soon, he and his guys are filling their bellies with last week's matzah. That is all in 1 Samuel 21, if you want to check it out. The reason I'm telling you all this is maybe just this. Because this is all stuff that Jesus knew. Like, Jesus had these stories about his ancestors in his back pocket. He had been told the stories about David and the mercenaries and the bread of presence by his parents and grandparents. He had heard them in Sabbath school. He had learned to read them in the Torah and the prophets and the writings. The characters of the stories of his ancestors in faith populated his moral imagination. And he could draw on the stories of his ancestors to help him make the next right decision. Indeed, one of Jesus's superpowers was knowing which story to pull from his past for any situation. So here we are in Luke chapter 6, and recently Jesus and his guys, not mercenaries, right, but disciples, were at Levi's house for a big party in the last chapter, but now it's the next day or the next week, and they don't have a dinner invitation on the table, and they are seriously, seriously homeless, nomads like their Israelite ancestors. They're low-key dodging the religious authorities because the VRP's scrutiny is bordering on violence now. And they're hungry. Like, actually, really hungry. And so in some stranger's grain field that is just about ready for harvest, they're doing this trick that they learned when they were kids, that if you snap the head of a stalk of wheat, you can roll it fast between your palms, and the friction will rub the chaff, the shell, off of the kernels, and you can eat that. Indeed, there are provisions in the religious law that says landowners have to let hungry strangers harvest grain this way, because you have to be really hungry to want to harvest grain that way. And religious law always favors people who are hungry. But you're not supposed to do it on the Sabbath, on the day of rest, ordained by the fourth of the big Ten Commandments. Walking through those fields, making all that heat with your hands, this is considered work. And work is a violation of trust in God's Exodus old promise to give you sustenance through the seventh day. And so the VRPs, the very religious persons who are making their list of all the ways that Jesus is out of alignment with their project of righteousness according to the law, they want to add this offense to their record. Jesus invites his accusers to think a little harder about what's happening right here, right now, in this grain field on this Saturday. What if it's less about an abstraction, about an inviolable rule written for all times and all places and all people, and more about what God permits for human flourishing in this moment? What if Jesus asks, this has happened before? What if our ancestors have already dealt with this issue and have given us guidance as to the nature and character of God that is not accessible through simple rule following? Remember David, he says, knowing that they do. And the priest on duty in the tabernacle at Nob, and the bread of the capital P, presence, and how hungry they were. Remember? It's not a small matter that they asked for that bread, but they all understood that human need trumps the rule. And that is why, gentlemen, you may call me Lord of the Sabbath. That is not what they're going to call him, but it is sweet that he tried. I want to note that Jesus had options here that day in the grain field. He could have said, you know, Sabbath keeping is stupid. It has caused way more heartaches than it was ever worth, and so I declare today that we are not doing that anymore. Or he could have said, you know, I've just never been that into Sabbath keeping. It's fine for some people, but I've decided it's just not for me, and everyone should use their best judgment about whether it works for them. He said neither of those. What he said was, I understand that there's a constraint on what I can do on this day. It's an old constraint. It's a traditional constraint with generations worth of influence and practice behind it. And Jesus was big on yes and. Within that constraint, there is, I find, room to move, room to wonder, room to reimagine. There is freedom within the constraint, Jesus said. Freedom for flourishing, freedom for wellness, freedom for life. The same conversation came up on another Sabbath, Luke says, and he conveniently next door neighbors the two stories in chapter 6 for us. A man with cerebral palsy, perhaps, or some injury to a limb, appears in the synagogue on a Sabbath, and Jesus again asks his accusers to consider precedent. Don't we know that certain kinds of labor are permitted on the Sabbath if the work brings about life and health and flourishing? And he restores the man's hand, Sabbath restrictions be darned. Or, rather, Sabbath restrictions be recast as bumper guards in a bowling alley, a conserving tradition with plenty of liberating room within. Now, for tonight, we could spend more time thinking about Sabbath keeping specifically, or about religious law keeping more generally. Those would both be good things to think about. Another time we will, we often do. But for tonight, for our series on spiritual practices for right now, I want to think even more meta about the reality that there is nothing happening in our world today that has not happened in our ancestors' worlds before. The rise of oligarchy, empire, nationalism unto fascism, check. The scapegoating cruelty of the powerful toward the marginalized, check. Identity difference as a boogeyman to be vanquished for the sake of purity, check. The ruination of land and sea and sky for greedy gain, check. Even the encroaching power of technology to reshape our idea of what it means to be human, our ancestors have seen all this, have done all this, have suffered all this before us. In these stories about Jesus and his Sabbath policing detractors, I hear him asking his religious kin to stop pretending that they are the first ones to face their dilemma about how best to honor God in a given situation. I hear him asking them to remember the long line of God's people who came before them, some of whom were really good at being God's people, some of whom weren't so much, but most of whom were trying their best most of the time and learning things along the way about God, about themselves, about how to best be God's people. There's a long thread of ancestors lined up behind us, I'm saying, who just like us have wondered what God wants and how we can get God more of that. They have struggled and sinned. They have succeeded and celebrated. Their names are in our memories, not because they were exceptional, but because they were like us, making their way through seasons of banquet and hunger, just trying their best to make the next right move in the world God still loves. Here's a trick that I started using in my prayers a while back, at a time when God felt far away and my trust was fading fast. I started praying to the God of my ancestors, the God with whom people long before me kept faith. Like, if I didn't have it quite in me to claim a close personal kinship with the God of the universe, I could sort of imagine myself adjacent to those who did. I could borrow their life of faith to support my own. So traditionally, this would be something like praying, "O God of Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, God of Isaac and Ishmael and their descendants, hear my prayer. O God of David and Jonathan and all their beloveds, hear my prayer." But those ancestors seemed very distant to me. Their stories are so muddled, it wasn't working as well as I'd hoped. So I went in search of ancestors to honor in my prayers, ancestors whose faithfulness I could bootleg. O God of Martin and Coretta King, God of Malcolm and Betty X, I would pray, knowing that God had heard their daily prayers for justice, for courage, for action. O God of Mother Teresa and Father Nouwen, I would pray, knowing that God had always heard their nighttime groanings for the gift of faith to conquer deep and disturbing doubt. O God of Top and Gaynell, I would pray, my maternal grandparents, who cast ballots on the opposite sides of every election, but believed in each other's clean conscience and good intentions, knowing that God had heard both their whispered prayers at the polls for guidance to honor God with their votes. It was a long time ago. Lately, I have settled on a new pair of ancestors whose faith I borrow in prayer. It's yours if you want it. O God of Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, I pray, having witnessed their lifetimes of public service, their willingness to leverage privilege and influence for the sake of the poorest of their neighbors globally and locally, having been grateful for their principled withdrawal from the Southern Baptist Convention when the SBC denied ordination to women, having been dumbstruck by their commitment to local congregational life, to simple living among their neighbors, to public rebukes of the powers, even at the cost of losing their Southern charm credentials, having been astonished at their courageous and public facing of death, no secrets, no pretending. O God of Jimmy and Rosalind, I pray, hear my prayer. I am not making up my faith from scratch. As I go along, I'm saying. Neither should you. My discipleship of Jesus has precedent among my ancestors. If I choose wisely, so does yours. Spiritual practices for right now, number four, honor your ancestors. Maybe not all of them, but you get to choose.
Thanks for listening to That's What She Said. If what you've heard is helpful, consider becoming a patron of its production by joining our subscribers on Patreon. This podcast is preached almost always by our lead evangelist, Reverend Dr. Katie Hayes. Galileo Church has five missional priorities. We do justice for LGBTQ+ people and support the people who love them. We do kindness around mental health and mental illness, and we celebrate neurodiversity. We do beauty for our God who is beautiful. We do real relationship, no bullshit, ever. And we do whatever it takes to share this good news with the world God still loves. To support our missional priorities, go to galileochurch.org and click on Share with Us. You'll have options to contribute through Venmo, PayPal, or your bank account. And if you're kind enough to share your contact information with us, we'll continually send you thanks. Peace.